Welcome back, interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar, joined by Jack Estabrook.
Hello, worm guy.
Cody Wolf.
It's Totopoulos.
It's very special guest, Tim Ferwito. Tied with Nick Newhart for our most prolific special guest.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
And as always.
We brought Tim in for a notoriously bad movie, and we should say Cody suggested this movie, though he also admits to being a fan of it, 1998 Godzilla. Yes. Not the new Godzilla. If you clicked on this and thought, oh, it's a review of the new Godzilla, no, this is not a review of the
Roland Emmerich movie.
Yes, the Roland Emmerich, Dean Devlin masterpiece, Godzilla from 1998. Okay, let's dive right into this. As it seems like so many of the movies we do in this podcast do, it starts off with a vague environmentalist message that never really says, like, this is bad, because it's a big corporation making it who probably doesn't, like, want to point the finger at themselves, but does sort of want to be like, hey, because we're polluting the Earth, we created Godzilla and something something.
We'd also disagree. Was this a Paramount film? Does anyone know? Does it say on the back of that?
I want to say this was
TriStar has the distribution rights.
That's why you see Sony.
I was thinking about, like, you know, how back in the days, like, they made all these movies back when Paramount was owned by Gulf and Western, two oil companies.
Yep.
They wouldn't put out anything they had to say, anything, any environmental message whatsoever.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm just going to say, I'm a huge Godzilla fan. I watched the movies when I was a little kid, and they're corny and cheesy. They're ridiculous fun. When this movie comes out, I was excited to see it.
Mm-hmm. I was too.
And then I never saw it because everyone I know told me they didn't like it. So I was like, oh. But the first thing I notice, the very first thing I notice, of course, is, well, what does Godzilla look like? Right? It's a nerd thing. You know, you want Godzilla to look cool in the movie. So they present this Godzilla that looks like a giant iguana. And then the opening shot of the film is like test footage from like a nuclear bomb or whatever. And it shows a bunch of iguanas watching the bomb go off.
Mm-hmm.
So are they implying, they never say it, but are they implying that this Godzilla is just a mutated iguana?
I believe they are saying that, because we also get some pretty funny lizard cutaway reaction shots. It's like you see a bomb going up and they like to lizard face watching it. And you're like, well, that's a strange way to portray that. All right.
Well, I was kind of like in a wonder, like when I was watching it last night, I only saw this movie once in the theater when it came out, hadn't seen it since then. And I'd forgotten about that opening, you know, that whole scenario that they lay out. And I was thinking, like it was like the lizards, you could almost think that they were saying, and it's coming together. Like they set everything in motion.
I feel like they put this, this is a plan. They seem to be, like, very sentient about what's happening.
Yeah, like the lizards had actually been pushing mankind toward this point.
Right.
Finally.
Right.
Now it's our turn.
We didn't have the thumbs.
Yeah.
It's our turn to rise. We will level their mightiest city.
Hey, we're going to jump around a little bit because this is a long movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's a lot to talk about. So, I mean, it starts off with, we see a fish boat. Godzilla sinks a fish boat.
French guys.
Which I kind of like in that that's from the original Godzilla. The first thing is, you know.
Yeah,
that's how it starts in the first Godzilla movie. Yes.
This wasn't terrible. It's sort of just like, oh, okay, like it's fine.
Mm-hmm. But they did do one of those things that I couldn't stand is, like, you know, whenever you see, like, you know, like the first shot of the ship, it's in the middle of the stormy tossing sea, the ship's heaving like this. Inside, people are drinking coffee.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, the meals are staying on the table. They're playing checkers and chess. Nothing's moving.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that great, like, Hollywood, like, disparity between, like, okay, that was shot in a studio. That's on studio location. Studio location, you know.
You play a little game.
Yeah. And we then get introduced to
Do we cut to the French guys yet?
No, we don't see them yet. $100 million movie plus. It's an action film starring Matthew Broderick. He is the lead in an action movie.
Yeah.
Yep. And they don't, like, Cody, your dad and I were talking about this. So much effort is put in by both the cinematography crew and the gaffing lighting crew to present him as a leading man. They deserve to be paid double whatever they got because they worked incredibly hard. It is all just comical. Plus, they introduce him singing a show tune.
Yeah.
Which is really
the same lyric over and over.
And he sings the whole song. Up. Yeah, he sings the entire song of Singing in the Rain. I was like, oh boy, like, you know.
And I think
I think they paid for the rights from like ASCAP, and they're like, we're getting our money's out, worth out right. of this.
We're gonna do Happy Birthday too later on.
Yeah. And he's collecting worms. Because he's some sort of biologist.
He's at Chernobyl, isn't he?
Chernobyl. How the radiation has made the earthworms 17% larger.
Yeah.
And I think mainly just whatever.
I wonder if, like, Kevin Dunn every now and then, like, if he bumps into Matthew Broderick at, like, a Hollywood function, shouts across the room, "Hey, worm guy!" And then they have, like, a little moment where they're like, oh, they reconnect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matthew Broderick actually, I think, would just slink off into the men's room. Yeah.
So the U.S. military shows up and they grab him. They're like, all right, we're taking you away. And, you know, Matthew Broderick, our tough guy, male lead, is like, but my worm work isn't finished. You know, and you get the, it is now. Okay.
The defying convention by having a non-likely action hero. That's what this movie is doing.
Well, I mean, all
he doesn't do anything action hero. He's kind of the brain.
Yeah, and he's really just the person there to explain what happened.
Right. Yeah.
You know, could have been almost anybody.
Yeah.
And I you know, you really got to kind of wonder, like, at one point was he cast along with, like, whatever draft of the script they might have been working from? Like, you know, was Matthew Broderick, did he make sense before they decided to have him, like, being running from velociraptors in Madison Square Garden?
Right.
And then, like, a point, well, we just got to shoehorn it in, you know?
Well, I wonder about it, too, because this movie's written by the people who wrote the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Oh, really?
I'm spacing on their name. It's like Terry Russo and, like, Cody's looking at he's got the back of the box.
Oh, really?
Right,
I thought Roland Emmerich wrote it.
Well, he actually did. The story is by the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, story
people.
By screenplay.
And then it was screenplay by Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a story by Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio and Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich.
Gotcha.
And then screenplay by. So Dean I'm wondering if they wrote this kind of in the model of what they did with Pirates of the Caribbean, which was like an action comedy mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dean Devlin and
Roland Emmerich. Probably maybe Matthew Broderick might have made sense.
Might have made sense. And then the storytelling genius of Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin came in, who have the anti-Midas touch. And just because one of the problems we'll get into this as we're talking about is I constantly felt throughout this movie like something was cut out. You would have jokes where there would be a punchline, but you'd be like, I don't think there was any setup for that. That's clearly a punchline, but there was no setup. Or you'd have setup and no payoff. You'd be like, what happened? Like, you know, it just so strange. The comedy failures of this movie should be like its own like graduate level class.
The problem is there probably shouldn't have been any comedy in it.
Well, it's kind of interesting. Like, there's like they would bring in all these different supplemental characters. Like, you know, what's Vicki Lewis, the red haired scientist who's horny as all hell for just about anybody.
But just in that one scene.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, like, immediately she feels her regret later on when she kisses the fat guy.
Yeah.
The fat scientist.
Yeah.
Michael Lerner doing the mayor.
Yes.
And, the Siskel and Ebert mayor and his assistant. Yeah.
Clearly,
like slapping the critics in the face for not liking their other movies.
Well, so let's talk about that a little bit. So Matthew Broderick gets taken to somewhere in the South Pacific by the military. There's a couple other scientists there.
He's actually in. Isn't he in Peru?
Or maybe it's
Peru.
Doesn't
it say it later on when they show the footage of the we're getting to the footprints, right?
Yeah.
They show the footage of the footprints later on, and it says here is in Peru.
Oh, he's okay.
In a ridiculous scene, which we'll get to.
Panama, I think it was.
Panama.
The way that they got they tried to explain that he got to New York was that he crossed the isthmus, which is like the narrowest.
He's in the Pacific. Okay.
This is another question, though. Are they saying in this movie that Godzilla went through the Panama Canal? This is really important. This
and,
racked
and
my
nobody
brain
saw him.
For a while.
Yeah, so, and he didn't pay the toll.
I know. Like, I was fascinated.
Well,
that
was the thing. It was like I actually had forgotten about the Panama thing until it was like all of a sudden I'm thinking to myself. So what? He swam all the way from the Pacific Islands all the way down the Horn and like all the way up to New York City at no point stopping to be seen anywhere along the way. Then I remembered. Oh wait, yeah, there was like a minute and a half where they're in that was where Panama was, where they brought him there, and he's like, here's your sample, and it's the footprints.
You're standing in it, and then the big dramatic reveal, it's
exactly.
A footprint.
And then they're following, like you have a helicopter shot following the footprints with no tail prints, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, he's not Godzilla old style dragging his tail, it's up in the air. But I mean, like, that was that was. I think that he was going across, because of course, he knows that that's the narrowest point.
Yes.
Well, and why travel. Why is he going to New York anyways?
They give a hokey reason for that. This made no sense.
Well, they say something like he can hide in New York, and
yeah, it was like
it's like, how does he know about New York?
Exactly.
Because you would never see like a bird. Like a bird isn't going to make its nest. Like a bird's going to make its nest in a tree. The bird's not going to make its nest in like the middle of the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. That didn't.
I think it was because like what they're trying to get across. Like they have to explain why New York. Because you know, if whatever city is America's Tokyo, it's New York City. You know, so it's gotta be in New York City, because if they have it anywhere, it's in Los Angeles. It's just too wide open and spread out. Yeah. What's there for them to crush?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The Die Hard Tower building in Century City, and then that's like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's got to be New York City, because it's like all those skyscrapers, and it's pre-9/11 New York City, so you can have fun watching New York City buildings come tumbling down. Yeah.
I will say right now is there, even in the classic Godzilla movies, they explain very easily. Why does Godzilla always rampage through Tokyo? Why is Godzilla only in Japan? Well, it's territorial. He's a creature.
Mm-hmm.
And most animals are territorial. You know, he's a non-migratory territorial animal who sometimes comes ashore and looking for food, which in Godzilla's case is usually nuclear energy sources. He absorbs the radiation or whatever. He comes ashore for a snack and he tears things up as he walks through the city. And then he goes back into the sea, occasionally kicking some monsters' asses. So even in that ridiculous framework of a classic Godzilla film, which is beyond ridiculous, there is some logic. Godzilla is in Tokyo because it's territorial.
If Godzilla
just happens to be where he's from.
The shore of New York City and then came ashore in New York City, it would make sense. But if he's coming from Japan or wherever.
They had some sort of explanation that had to do with his reproduction, getting as far away as possible to make the nest. But he's also the first of its kind, so who's he hiding the eggs from?
Right.
No predators, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start this. So Matthew Broderick gets now taken to Panama. He meets, the military introduces him to his superior scientist, who's Vicki Lewis, who immediately harasses the crap out of him. I mean, her first thing is she gives him an up-down. kind of checks him out and just is so like lecherous and like creeping on him. It's like, oh,
this is like a holdover from a previous script, I bet.
I guess so. And then they meet another scientist. I have a note here. I'm like,
he sneezes.
That's it. That's his hook. Yeah. His hook is that he has a cold. And
it's a summer cold.
Okay, so we've introduced Hornball, Vicki Lewis, and a guy with a cold. That's their character hooks. Never paid off.
Yep.
Never paid off.
And not only that, actually, that the one that sneezed,
yeah,
he only had one more line in the whole film.
You know what? Why is he a character?
Did they even play up the joke where like they're hiding from like Godzilla and then ha-choo! And then the monster like rears its head and they all have to run away? Like that's just off the top of my head.
I honestly don't understand.
That would be the only logical reason for him to have a cold in the movie.
Well, exactly. Yeah,
why didn't they think to put that in. Characters? Like why is Vicki Lewis and that guy? They accomplish nothing in the movie that the Kevin Dunn character couldn't have done. You know, there's no point
I think a lot of these things they've got to be just like remnants from earlier scripts. That kind of stuff has to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just don't like, you know, sit down and think of my final draft. What's it's going to have? It's going to have these two people.
Right.
They show up, do one thing, you never have any worth, and we never hear from them again.
Maybe in the original script, they're going to go Independence Day with it and have Matthew Broderick figure out he has to give Godzilla a cold.
Oh, I
was just happy that the movie didn't end with Godzilla watching a countdown to an explosion.
Yeah. And then for a movie that's in theory about a gigantic monster attacking a city, I would argue that the plot of the movie is really about the inner workings of a New York City television station. We spend a lot more time.
It was like broadcast news brings you Godzilla.
Yeah, also Godzilla. Like,
so we're introduced to the love interest, the female character, Audrey.
Well, and before that, we meet creepy news anchor Harry Shearer.
Yep.
And before I blast this, and I want to say, I think Hank Azaria is very funny. I think Harry Shearer
really
is very funny.
And they both work.
They're very talented people. They're working with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They are, in fact, less than nothing.
I'm surprised Harry, as best as they can.
He's not even selling anything. He's like selling air. Like there's jokes that aren't even like jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's short, and that's like the joke for Harry Shearer.
There's so many lines. I'm like,
Oh yeah, the chair is too short for him or whatever. So he's like squatting at the desk, so he looks tall.
And it's very like jokey jokes. Yeah. And again, I'm like, this is a Godzilla movie. Like, what are these bits doing in here?
And here's the thing: I was actually thinking about this when the movie was all done, about how like so many of these '90s action films, and even like, you know, with ones that they've done, Day After Tomorrow and Independence Day, they all had this formula of where, like, you know, the movie has to, for whatever reason, we've got to make it 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
And to do so, we've got to have all these other characters and subplots. Like, the main character has to have someone that they used to be in love with play an incidental part in the film. Like, it, like Jeff Goldblum's character in Independence Day had the woman that used to work with him also just happens to be presidential aide. Very handy. Comes, you know, to be, you know, a really good, you know, strong coincidence for the film.
Yeah.
Same thing for Godzilla. Same thing for all those other movies. There's always like this, like the romantic interest from the past comes in. They always have, like, you know, these idiot people in charge in the background and people that are muddling things up. They all have almost the same formula of like, we have these characters. They don't really contribute much, but we have them to kind of like fill it out and make it funny.
There's like a lot of filler. Yeah, like this. It's amazing how much just like kind of dead time this movie spends doing nothing.
Is this where we finally get the shot where she recognizes her boyfriend from across the room from file footage of him standing in a footprint in Panama, which is how we knew that Panama was where they were?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. And she's like, hey, that's
what about that
boyfriend.
Guy Nikki used to date? Oh, I don't know. It didn't work out. He asked me to marry him and I said no. Oh, well, then I guess you know why it didn't work out. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, he's on TV.
Right. Yeah. Right.
In the footprint.
Yes. Yes.
And she sees him.
Yeah. And we ultimately, I mentioned earlier, Hank Azaria is playing a news photographer.
Mm-hmm.
She, the this girl, what's her name? Audrey. She's
the character's name is Audrey.
She's, what, I mean, it's funny. Like, we work in, all of us at this table have worked in TV news. Mm-hmm. I think her job would be considered, it might be a production assistant. It might be a researcher.
I think she's just assistant to Harry Scherer, it seems.
Maybe his secretary.
But she wants to be a reporter.
She wants to be a reporter. And Hank Azaria is a news videographer. Who's running around and whose wife is the most bizarre in a movie with characters that make no sense. Uh-huh. I do not understand at all.
They why had Hank to have Azaria's like someone like quintessentially New York, you know?
Yes.
These fighting, angry, bickering.
Yeah,
we
retard.
Love each other,
what are you doing,
you know?
You retard?
She calls
exactly.
She
calls him, like, you know, 30 years from then, they'll be like, you know, Edith and Archie.
That's a line in the movie. Yeah. She says, "Get back here, you retard." I'm like, whoa.
She calls him a WAP like 5 minutes
later.
Like,
too. Well, yeah, like, what? Yeah, she does. WAP. I'm like, it felt does. Like if you asked, like, my grandmother from New England to do her like worst impression of like a New York, like a Brooklynite from the like 80s, you would get this character. It's so broad. Mm-hmm. I mean, like very broad comedy.
Well, then her character ends up not really paying off anyways because she disappears for the
none of
yeah, and then they have her at the end like being kind, opening that, like they realize, boy, she's coming across as a bitch. We'll have to have her like bring in all the people
like
that have
refugees
been
from Manhattan.
Yeah.
Yeah, going to Brooklyn.
They keep calling everyone refugees as well. As if Godzilla's also performing like, you know, like female circumcision and, you know, doing horrible political things, too.
They're all political prisoners from Godzilla.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Godzilla tariff now.
They were reading Catcher in the Rye, so they threw them all in prison.
Yeah. And now, so somewhere in here, Godzilla comes... Oh, okay, here's another question I want to ask you guys. Did anyone else get the feeling that this movie kept trying to pay weird homages to Jaws?
Yeah.
Okay,
we're gonna need bigger guns.
We're gonna need bigger guns. The scene when Godzilla comes out of the water with the old guy on the pier,
like the two guys
the
are trying to catch
exploding,
the shark.
Yep.
Yeah, the mayor feels.
By the
like...
way, did you notice how like his two bum friends were like hilarious? It's like he's about to die. They're laughing their ass off at him.
I know. Like, what was that? That was disturbing. Like that scene, the tone of that scene is crazy making because you don't know, is this supposed to be suspenseful? Funny, neither. informational, like it's like every actor and every crew member has a different vision of how this scene is playing out, and they all got edited together. Nobody said no to like whatever anyone's instincts were. They're like, go with it. Go with that. You see it as broad comedy, play it that way. You see it as horror, play it that way. You know?
Go with your gut.
Yeah. Just, ugh. So now Godzilla makes landfall. And he's in...
Start without me?
What the...
What? What are you doing here?
What happened?
You just...
I just wanted to come by. I was in the area.
A cameo from Andy Wolf.
Hey!
Godzilla. Hey, Tim!
Hey,
how
you
doing?
98?
Yeah.
My thoughts sucked. Started off with promise. I thought it might be pretty good. Then I saw Godzilla.
What?
Downhill from
Can
there.
I just ask you a quick question?
The Madison Square Garden bullshit, all that whole
sidebar. Oh. Wait, quick question before you run out. What was showing promise to you? Because I really wanted...
I remember,
it was a good preview. It was a good preview.
I haven't watched it since...
1998?
Yeah, since Drive-In. I saw it in the Drive-In, I think. Didn't we go see Drive-In?
Yeah.
Okay.
And...
You mean before you saw the movie, like the trailer? You thought
no, we went to the drive-in to see the movie.
Okay, it is so the early scenes of the movie,
like
with
the opening credits,
with
like,
leading
no,
man.
No, I like in mind. All I can remember is like Matthew Broderick was doing some botany.
Well,
earthworms.
I think they got biology.
Biology. That was what was promising to you.
No, I just thought it was going along okay. I was like, oh, this might be good. But then, like I said, then I saw what's his face, Hank Azaria, come in and
play a cameraman, something you take very close to your heart.
And the one funny joke was when he thought he was rolling, but he pushed the tape in because the tape wasn't pushed in.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like
I'm sure that was hilarious for everyone, not just for those of us who have operated the news camera.
It stunk. It was the whole thing for me was a Madison Square Garden. I mean, after seeing Godzilla looking like a big giant lizard,
mm-hmm.
and then there's more eggs, and it just was terrible. Terrible from that point on.
Yeah. All right. Well, good summary. Thoughts. Good summary.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Little Andy
Thank
Wolf
you very much.
Cameo. Wow.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
Andy Wolf is
up
the building.
In this.
I was in the area.
Okay. So Godzilla makes landfall. And this is where one of the bigger problems I have in this movie is Godzilla is walking around Manhattan.
Yes.
And yet, for large chunks of the movie, no one knows where he is.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's a scene where a character says, like, an army's like, we lost sight of him.
What? Really?
What? He's, by this movie's definition, like 20 stories tall and walking around slowly. You lost sight of him?
It was dark out. It was raining constantly.
And that's another thing. Where's this lightning motif? The entire film is like lightning. So they show a wide shot of the Manhattan skyline and lightning. They show Godzilla's like humping a building and lightning. They show like the military planes are flying in and there's lightning.
Right.
It's like, where does lightning coincide with Godzilla?
It was a strange visual look they were going. I thought this movie looked awful. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the cinematography and the production design on this, I thought was atrocious.
It's just kind of dreary. It's just a lot of rain.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like the constant rain was just, I mean, eventually just like gets like grating, actually, because you're watching this movie and almost for so much of it, you just have the sound of rain always, and it starts to give you a freaking headache.
Right.
And but yeah, it just makes everything look muddy. I mean, I really wonder if that had to do, like, the reason they had the rain was to kind of cover for some of the things not looking so good.
Because it was going to be so special effects heavy, maybe they thought, well, if we can muddy up the picture with like rain and fog, like we'll hide that. Maybe. Yeah, it just looked bad. The effects looked bad. The cinematography was bad. And then, so Hank Azaria gets a picture, video of Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing it on TV. This is the biggest, dumbest laugh I got in the movie. They play it on TV, and Harry Shearer's anchor throws to it and goes, WIBF cameraman Victor Animal Parati got a shot of the monster. This is a national disaster. You're referring to a photographer by his nickname? Like, can you imagine being like, this house blew up on live TV, you know? Tim, funny man for Weedo, got us this photo. Like, what? Not the time for a nickname.
Exactly.
You know?
No, like, thanks, no, my chance of getting to Washington Bureau is shot.
Right, yeah. Glad to know that people in this business take me seriously and are referred to as Animal on live TV.
Good gravy.
If any of my coworkers had said, just call me Animal, I wouldn't call him.
No, I'd be like, well, thanks, I'll pass. Yeah. And if you ever watch this movie again, I highly recommend listening to the news reports that Harry Shearer is delivering. I don't. Mm-hmm. They must have been written, but they're total nonsense. Like, it's Harry Shearer talking about like traffic and like stores are closed. And it's like, guys, there's a 20-story exactly. monster running around. Like, I don't. Nobody cares about the traffic. They want to hear about the 20-story.
Well, I also love how like at one point, I heard him say like, you know, when we come back, and I'm like, you're going to a break? You're going to a commercial?
What advertiser is?
They got to get the weather report.
In on this. Like, you know, this isn't a regular disaster. Yeah. The world has never seen a 200-foot tall lizard ever in their life. If that just showed up on an island somewhere and sat there, you'd be round the clock, never showing anything else.
We'll be right back. Yeah.
Exactly. They got to get to the weather report.
Yeah.
Godzilla is brought to you by Goodyear.
We get
it. And actually, on top of that, did you notice all the friggin' plugs in this movie for everything that was tied into promoting it?
What I really
Yum
love.
Yum Brands, every goddamn soda, this Lay's what, chips, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell.
Blockbuster
everywhere.
And what I really loved was when Godzilla trashed the MetLife building, because MetLife wanted their logo in the movie, so there's like a hole cut out of the MetLife building. Like he jumped through the building, in a cartoon when Bugs Bunny runs through the wall and you see the outline of Bugs Bunny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but they had a few different buildings that he just ran through. Like no knowledge that like they're not cliff walls that you can't.
Yeah.
God.
But the building would have fallen over.
Exactly. It's like staying up by just like the corners of the support. Oh God.
It's terrible. And my favorite subplot, because like Tim said, there's all these filler subplots going on. The weirdest one, and it had to be different in the original script, was the mayor and the mayor's aide who have this bickering back and forth thing where the mayor wants to eat candy and the aide is like, no more sweets till after the election. And every time they went into this bit, I'm like, again, 200-foot tall monster running around. Like,
well, yeah, no one in the movie ever seems concerned that there's a monster running around the city. Like everyone in the city.
Everyone wants to get it open for business again. Yeah. Just like the mayor in Jaws.
The citizens don't want to evacuate.
It's like, you know, we're out. It's like, are you kidding me? I would be in Omaha right now if I could.
Yeah.
And again, this is supposed to be just a shameless, childish, you know, Siska and Ebert don't like my movies. That's fine. I'll put them in Godzilla and make them look like idiots.
Yeah. Because that was the whole thing. I'm like, is that they were Siskel and Ebert.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Mayor Ebert.
Yeah.
Mayor Ebert and Gene, his campaign manager.
Yeah. Oh
my God. One thing that we forgot to mention, I actually kind of like, though I don't think it works in the film, but the characters themselves I thought were cool, was sort of this French subplot where Jean Rousseau is in the movie and he plays like this French agent. They loosely are saying, I guess, the French created Godzilla.
Yeah, and actually that was something that I kind of was a little pissed off about, because basically what they're saying is in this whole movie is that, like, you know, we the Americans weren't to blame. Of course, we did a whole lot of Pacific testing. Right. But this one, the French... It was them.
Yep.
It was the French. Couldn't have been America.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
No way. It was the frogs.
I do feel
how far from Japan could you get than France?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, for creating Godzilla.
I think it was more a decision of like, who does everybody hate? And everybody hate in like, but we're not going to get in trouble for being like racist. Mm-hmm. And you really boil that down, and you're like, oh, it's France.
Yeah.
Like, everybody hates France, and you don't come off looking like a horrible person when you say it.
Like, below that, you get the Brits, you know. Well, Russia's pretty much universal.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot of atomic testing in the Pacific Islands for them. They just use their own people.
In 1998, that was almost like a cheap shot. You'd be like, oh, God, they're so down already. Like,
true.
We spent the 80s beating them up, you know.
But I thought that Jean Rousseau is doing well. I kind of like the bit where he can't get good coffee. Like, you don't know who these characters are.
You like that bit?
What is that bit?
It doesn't work in the movie, but I enjoyed the scene itself. I was like, okay, ha, that was a little funny.
Like, as far as until you know, like, before we know, like, at this point, we don't know who they are or why they're here.
Yeah, right.
At least it's kind of like a little something, well, maybe not appropriate for that time, but, like, if you're going to do something for make about the fact that, like, they're an American, they can't get a croissant that they enjoy.
I like the bit where, like, they chew gum. Why you chew gum? It makes us look like Americans.
That's actually kind of
I like
clever.
When he talks like Elvis to sneak past the guard. There are little things about
gum,
that I like.
The gum was the great one where I'm like, okay, we're definitely getting a setup that I don't think really ever paid off into, like, an actual developed joke. No, yeah. It was sort of like a concept that they were like, this could be funny if we, and you're like, yeah, if you do something with it, you know? Well, and like, they have a running joke with Jean Reno and the coffee thing, which is terrible. I mean, it's horrible that that's a running gag. I'm like, oh, this coffee's terrible. Never pays off.
Yeah. Nope.
Never pays off.
Like at the end of the movie, he gets like, a good one or whatever.
It's the kind of thing where, it's like at the end of Punch and Hawk, he finally gets his cappuccino.
Yeah, I'm like, how do you, even in terrible movie terms, if you're going to do that as a runner through five scenes, like, please pay that off. Like,
He needs to get his good coffee by the end.
They may notice there's a scene with like the girl Aubrey on the subway when they're like I think like evacuating or she's talking to Matthew Broderick or someone on the subway.
Oh, is that after she steals the ID, the press ID, she's talking to
she steals the press animal ID,
or to his girlfriend or to his wife.
And so they play a scene in the subway. This isn't really funny, but it was funny to me. If you look next to them, there's a woman or a man, you can't even really tell, carrying a fishbowl with a goldfish in it. I just thought, I got a big laugh out of that, just like, it's such a tiny detail, but things are so bad, someone's going to take their fishbowl home.
Yeah.
And second, some poor extra, probably for like 8 or 9 hours that day, had to stand there holding their fishbowl. There has got to be somebody out there who's like, see that fishbowl? That's me.
Yep.
You know, like I held that for an entire day. Every time they said cut, I could put the fishbowl down.
Yep.
Really? And then, so is this where Matthew Broderick comes up with the idea to make, this is really his character's big contribution to the movie is, hey, let's make a big fish pile. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it. Because, they couldn't have thought of that of that except
because
for the worm
it came
guy.
From his exclusive worm research where you draw the worms out of the soil.
So he's going to draw with electric probes, by the way. He didn't, set out enticing worm food. He put in electric probes to shove them out of the soil.
Decides, if we put a big pile of fish in the middle of the street, Godzilla will be drawn out.
They didn't. Truthfully, as far as too many subplots, I would have liked to have seen wherever it was that they went to commandeer all that fish. I would have liked to have seen that bit.
Yeah.
But after the first thing fails and they try to do it again, I think they dumped it all in Central Park.
We should say that, by the way, the first of two times that this film hinges around a giant pile of fish. It's not even once they do this.
That's right, they hinge it. The thing that I love is that the second time that they did it, and by then he kind of figures out that, big fish piles are bad, they get me shot. They had the computer graphic of the
a giant fish.
But it had the giant fish, but not just that. But did you notice that up in the top, it had the name of the operation? It said Fish Pile 2.
Yeah,
Fish Pile 2. Which if anyway,
there's a bunch of army guys being like, oh god,
no Fish Trap, Fish Trap 2,
Fish Trap 2,
it said Fish Trap 2. I had it.
I hope I'm not around for Fish Trap 3. I gotta retire.
I was too distracted by the giant fish icon where that was on the map.
Fish Trap 2 should just be the title of something anyway.
It almost looks like an Atari game, where, the little fish moves and you gotta get it to eat all the little dots.
And as they're building it, it's almost like somebody in editing realized it's dumb because you get a cutaway to Jean Reno being like, ooh, very clever. This is not clever.
You're right, they did, didn't they? And you gotta force that on the audience.
There's a total, I think it's an ADR line of Matthew Broderick just at the end going, that's a big pile of fish. Dead silence. And I'm like, well, okay.
You're right.
why did we need that?
It did hang there. That was the gag line for that whole thing.
And then for some reason, he leads a group of soldiers to lift manhole covers because that's somehow going to distribute the fish stink.
Yeah. Because he's subterranean. Because something that big. Yeah, that's how big the sewers are. Sewers are totally, they have 150-foot diameter.
Right.
But...
in the world of this movie, it works. Godzilla's fish.
Yep.
You know?
Comes up erupting from the bottom. Yeah, because he just clawed his way underneath everything.
Yeah, he's like, all right, I'll take these fish if nobody wants them. Mm-hmm. Are you guys throwing this out? I'm all right. It's been a 5-minute rule. All right, I'll take them. We now get, this is how sad and depressing this movie was to me, that at one point, sitting alone in my living room, I just sort of sadly said to myself, Rocket, you know, as they launch slow-moving rockets at Godzilla.
Yeah, and also
Godzilla seems to avoid, not even intending to avoid the rocket, just
like he's bending over.
Yeah, he's just like walking, and it like goes by him. He seems to be like, whoa. What?
And their excuse is they can't lock on to a cold-blooded signature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not a scientist or a biologist, but I do believe that anything that big, even cold-blooded, would generate enough heat where a heat signature would probably...
Are you telling me that the filmmakers didn't research this?
They should have researched the science of a giant monster to make it realistic. Well, their excuse for making it look like a reptile, I remember, because I thought the design sucked because I was a Godzilla fan, was, well, we don't want it to look like a man in a suit. We want it to look more believable. Okay, why doesn't he breathe fire? Well, because breathing fire is too unbelievable. Okay.
But they have those like implications where he's like breathing fire is like cars tumble away from his yell and they somehow explode huge.
So it looks like he's breathing fire.
But
well, and somewhere in here,
for cheap trailer shop to fool you into going to see it.
So next, Biggs, Porkins, and Red 4 seem to go after Godzilla, through Manhattan. And this whole like crazy like helicopter chase scene, and I'm not sure, maybe this is a later helicopter chase scene, but I have to talk about Godzilla has incredible powers in this movie. And I talked with Andy about this.
Stealth powers, too.
Stealth powers.
He can disappear.
If you're familiar with the scene in Batman Begins, when Batman is, like, swooping out of the sky to, like, grab bad guys and disappearing, and nobody knows where Batman is, and they're all super paranoid. That's basically Godzilla for a lot of this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
At one point, a team of attack helicopters are firing on something they think is Godzilla, and Godzilla comes through another building, like Kool-Aid Man,
behind them,
grabs them,
and then disappears immediately. Again.
And immediately, first of all, how did he know? Godzilla on the other side of the building was thinking like, "Haha, I've got them now.
This will do it."
Yeah, I've lured them into my trap. No one sees my 200-foot self.
And then the next shot, because he destroys that helicopter or jet or whatever, or his helicopter. And he disappears again, and they're flying along. They're like, I think we lost him. And he, like, jumps up from
beneath.
He's, like, bending down underneath the helicopter, like, waiting to pounce on it as it
comes. Well, I think also, like, one point, like, the helicopter, like, when Godzilla's chasing them, we can't shake him! You're in a helicopter! Go up!
Go up!
For Pete's sake! Yeah. And then they had that one point, I think it was, like, later on in the film, as they're approaching the demise of him. At one point, they have, like, literally, like, 20 gun helicopters. But they're, like, all in the same... Like, they should have blown half of themselves apart just from the fact that they're firing at anything wildly.
Yes. Yeah. And then we go to the whole Matthew Broderick pregnancy test.
Yeah.
From
the one drug store that's still open and has a woman that knows how pregnancy tests work.
A lot of things happen in this scene.
Why is this drugstore open?
Things that are open.
She's totally, like, calm, too.
She's totally calm. Drug stores open. Donut stores seem to be open.
Yeah.
Multiple donut stores. You can get a croissant. It may not be good, but you can still get a croissant in Manhattan. Like, plenty of places are open. Plenty of other places seem to be evacuating disaster style. It's whatever works for the movie at
whatever
that moment.
Whatever they need at that point. Which is, like, that's the thing that kills me. Like for because, like, when Broderick walks out, like, that street that he was on, where he exits the drugstore, has been devastated.
Yeah.
Rubble everywhere. This woman, unless she just came on, just opened up the late night drugstore,
right,
has no idea of what's happened. And she is, like, calm as all hell.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
This is where they choose to have him bump into his old flame.
Ugh.
Yeah,
she pregnancy comes in tests.
Aubrey, what are you doing here? I'm buying pregnancy tests. What are you doing here or whatever? Or no, he's buying.
A little late,
still.
Huh?
Yeah, and so now we get into this whole thing.
And he's buying the pregnancy test, too, by the way, because of the fish, he says.
Well, what it is that he was thinking that the fish, he was getting the fish not for Godzilla to eat, but for its young. So he wants to check and see if it's pregnant. And he says because, they undergo the same hormonal changes. Really, lizards have the same hormones as mammal animals.
So you're telling
me, and not to mention, it's a mutant species. It's a new species, so you have no way of saying.
But he knows all about this lizard. He knows everything that's going on with this lizard. I just like the jump lizard.
He makes because of he's taking all the fish. He can't possibly be eating it for himself because he's a giant lizard.
Are you serious? Look at how big he is.
Right.
Yeah, he just swam here from Panama. You know that. He's hungry.
Why wouldn't? So he's like, he must be pregnant.
So by the logic of this movie,
so he's a she.
You can take an iguana. You can put an iguana's blood on a human pregnancy test, and it will tell you if said iguana is pregnant.
Immediately tell you.
Because I don't, first of all, that's not even how a pregnancy test works. Pregnancy tests don't even work with human blood. This is insane.
And not to mention, even if this thing did work, Godzilla's not carrying young within his body. The eggs have already been laid.
Well, here's the thing of it also. All right, so this is the thing that really just cheesed me off as well. I know that they needed to, like, up Jurassic Park, and that's why they had all the
babies. That's the only reason why they made the movie. That's
why they did that, you know? But here's the thing of it. I guess they felt that they had to show that the place was just crawling with lizards because he's laid 200 eggs. I don't care how big Godzilla is in this film. Take a look. All right, here's the head. All right, there's no egg-laying structure in there. Ribs, lungs, meat. All right, that's the chest cavity. Here's his legs. Are you telling me that he had 200 human-sized, bigger than human-sized, eggs crammed up inside of itself, just waiting to find? No, it did not. Like, the total of the eggs was more than the volume of the creature itself.
And we're jumping ahead a little bit, but this he's laying them in Madison Square Garden, filling Madison Square Garden. So again, drugstores open, donut places open, other businesses open. No one in Madison Square Garden was like, hey, there's like 200 like 10-foot tall eggs in here.
They have at least a night security crew.
Yeah, like, so Godzilla walked into...
What was Godzilla doing? Like, how... I don't know.
When did he lay the eggs? He's only been in New York for like 2 hours.
And if Godzilla
must have been, like, really cramped up in there, like,
was he in Madison Square Garden laying eggs with no one knowing this? Yeah, I mean, Madison Square Garden actually is not that tall. Yeah. It would be shorter than Godzilla.
Yeah. See, I mean, the thing is, the roof was still on it at the end when they blow it up. So he got in there, obviously. From below,
we should have. Of Godzilla, like, crouched up in like a fetal position, popping out eggs. That would have been a great.
A 4-minute segment of just him screaming as these are coming out of his ass. People would have heard that.
Yeah, somebody would.
And again, they keep calling him heat. Oh, they reproduce asexually. That's their excuse for getting away with the shameless Velociraptor ripoff in the egg laying sequence, but not ticking off the fans by making Godzilla female. But Godzilla laid eggs. Ergo, he's now she.
Ergo. No, well, he reproduces asexually. Not even that. Does Broderick make that leap that it's asexual.
Maybe there's a male. You know?
He says, he's trying to, like, get everyone to understand the danger of these creatures. He's like, he actually says later on, they're born pregnant.
Right.
And we can have over, I think he said, like, 20,000 or 40,000 Godzillas in a year.
Did they dissect one of those little things?
It's like, how do you know that they're born? Nothing on the planet is born pregnant. B, how long do you, I'm like, do you know how long it takes for a Godzilla to grow from human-sized baby to what we're seeing around town here?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He conveniently knows
everything. I wasn't this mad watching, and I'm mad now.
Yeah.
He knows this without ever laying eyes on a Godzilla baby either at this point. He
just they hadn't even discovered the nest yet.
Right. They don't even know.
In fact,
not even reptile eggs, which are all leathery and weird shaped. No, these are friggin' chicken eggs.
Yeah. So we'll jump forward a little bit.
Well, because now he gets discredited because
Aubrey goes back and steals
the professionally edited security camera footage.
Yeah. And she does a TV news report, which, to pull the curtain back a little bit, like, I'm a TV news reporter, so when she's doing her stand-up, this is what, like, infuriates me about movies like this. I know everyone, when their profession shows up in a Hollywood movie, it's, like, ridiculous.
They get angry.
They simplify it. But that a professional writer had her outro as... And this is why all the king's horses and all the king's men may not be able to put the Big Apple together again. Really? You have a disaster scene of unprecedented scale and your outro...
It's still going on. It's
still going on with this monster running around and your outro is a play on a nursery rhyme? Really? Like, that is how and a professional screenwriter sense.
And they like it. They're
sees, like, journalism?
She's like, was that too good? Was that too corny? And he says, no, it's great.
Yeah, Animal is like good stuff.
Of course, look at Animal's fashion sense. I don't think I would take his opinion on too much, other than, you know, how to cure different STDs.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And Team Jean Reno is still like lurking around.
Yeah, they just keep coming back to him.
Well, he gets discredited like now because now Dr. Titopoulos, Matthew Broderick gets discredited because this professionally edited tape of French people interrogating a Japanese guy who says Gojira, which is why they call the monster Godzilla, he gets in trouble. We now don't believe any of your science because your girlfriend stole a tape from you that you thought you could trust her. So that's your fault, not her fault. We're going to fire you. And then the French guys immediately pick him up and say, we know that you're the real good.
The thing that also is that, like, you know, when he got fired and he's leaving, he's literally doing, like, the old movie and TV show cliche of carrying his crap out in a banker's box.
I want to go back to one other thing. First of all, why, when Jean Reno is interviewing that guy who survived that boat accident, why is a lighter, like, is Jean Reno, like, threatening him with the lighter? Like,
I thought he was hypnotizing him.
He's, like, holding a lighter in front of this guy being like, what did you see? And I'm like, what is going on here? It was very, very strange. Well, and then, okay, so Matthew Broderick is totally emotionless as he gets fired from the U.S. military operation. Like, okay. And then equally unemotional when he gets hired by the secret French. It's just basically like, oh, okay, I'm working with you guys now. All right.
Exactly.
You
know,
there's to be honest, it didn't, and it's another flaw in this screenplay of like, why are these even separate? It doesn't even really make sense that Jean Reno's team is separate. You could have had the Jean Reno and like Kevin Dunn teams working together.
Exactly.
The movie not changing. He's got this information.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing is like he's trying to keep it secret that the French was involved in the creation of Godzilla, which is the reason why he takes that tape at the end.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Like, to keep Godzilla secret now.
Yeah. And
I think the world knows.
It's so lazy. There's even a line where like Matthew Broderick says, why the secrecy? And, you know, Jean Reno just says, I am not permitted to speak of such things. Okay, so thank you, movie, for just letting us know you're lazy. You needed this as some kind of storytelling device, and you don't feel like backing it up. Great. Okay. So I'm trying to... All right, where...
So Animal follows Broderick.
Why was Animal following Matthew Broderick?
Because he was going to talk sense into him, because he just got in a fight with Audrey.
Ugh.
Because Audrey is an awful human being.
He's going to talk sense into Broderick and tell him, look, just forgive her.
Well, she's blonde with that kind of ringlet hair.
Yeah.
So obviously she's good at heart.
Yeah.
She was just misguided.
I don't know. She's pretty terrible in this movie, kind of actually. Yeah.
So he follows and he sees that he's working with a friend. She's like listens to another conversation or something. So he goes back to Audrey.
I love how he can hear, like, they were having that conversation in the warehouse. He's in a broken window about 200 feet away, hears every word.
Yeah. So he goes back to Audrey and tells her, we got to go follow these guys because they're looking for the monster. And this is your big story. You can break the story or whatever.
And by the way, Hank Azaria's wife is blaming him for Aubrey being upset and Matthew Broderick losing his job, which is possibly the biggest stretch in a movie full of stretches. I'm like, wait, like, what is that even doing in there? Hank Azaria did nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they go off and they're following the French and Broderick.
So now it's at this point is when they start heading towards the garden.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. This is where they...
At some point, Godzilla gets killed, and then he comes back.
Submarine,
and he gets shot by a submarine.
A submarine in the Hudson River.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they're so easy to navigate in the Hudson River.
Right. Absolutely.
Like the Hudson River is like literally as deep as like the Adriatic, in this friggin' film.
And we also get a moment where one submarine shoots another submarine, with Godzilla not causing it. I mean, Godzilla just swimming.
Godzilla knows how torpedoes works.
Yeah.
Like, he literally does the Hunt for Red October thing of making it follow him, get out of the way, smashes the other guy. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So they realize somehow, like, all of our main characters end up in Madison Square Garden.
Well, yeah, because they follow... Animal and Audrey are following Broderick and the French people. Yeah. And they somehow just follow.
Yeah, I don't Godzilla's remember. Tunnel. How did they? Are they just finding like? Are they following fish?
I think they're following fish and this destruction. So underground. There's like destroyed subway following cars. Following
fish. That's another title.
My God, yeah. This is so dumb.
There's like okay. destroyed subway cars and fish, and they're following it to where they come up upon the underground of.
The more you Madison think about Square this Garden. Movie, Tim is right. The more you think about this movie, the more infuriating it is.
It is. Yep. It, yeah. it really is. It's really lazy.
Yeah.
Anyway. Trash the god. Now I'm pissed.
So yeah, it's god. Okay, so it's full of eggs that are starting to hatch.
Immediately, because of course eggs hatch within 8 hours of being laid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. And so you have these velociraptors because we've all implied, this is heavily Jurassic Park influenced. Mm-hmm. This is clearly somebody at Sony who's like, Universal's making a mint with that Jurassic Park movies, get us something like that.
And there had to be. I cannot believe that they had that in mind when they wrote whatever first draft it was. You know, it was going to be just a straightforward Godzilla. Someone from the studio said, you've got to do this.
Right, right. Get us some. So the velociraptors are running around the garden, which is okay, because a point that is emphasized heavily over the next 45 minutes in the movie is all you need to do is make sure the doors are closed.
Mm-hmm.
If the doors, that's the answer to everything. Just make sure there's a bunch of dinosaurs in there. Just close the door. All right, we're all cool.
Yep.
Like, the door is closed. Everyone's safe.
Like, at one point, like, you know, the dinosaur is actually, like, you know, like, Mythos Robotica has closed the door. The dinosaur is pressing up against it. Yeah, Matthew Broderick can hold a door against an 8 foot tall
Godzilla. Characters running around being like, close the doors. I'm like, they're dinosaurs. Why? A dinosaur should just be like ripping this apart. You know?
That's like the start of like them going through a building, like, you know, when they get older. Yeah, it's like you just work out on doors.
Godzilla's jumping through buildings, but his babies can't get through a door.
Yeah.
So they go up to the broadcast booth, I guess, because it's the only way to get word out.
Which, actually, my favorite line is in this scene if we start talking about it.
Well, first,
we're going
to
do it.
First, I like Matthew Broderick tries calling this number that Jean Reno gives him. So I guess it's a French Secret Service or something. So he calls on his cell phone. It's like, this number is busy.
All circuits
are
busy.
So he tries again in a payphone.
So he tries another phone. He goes to a payphone and tries. It's like, the problem wasn't your phone. The problem is the circuits are busy. So then they decide the only way to get word out to the world is to get into the broadcast booth and broadcast live.
And that's where, because, you know, well, like, well, how are they going to broadcast? They got to get someone's attention, right. This and that. Like, well, how can we do it? Oh. Here's the solution. Now, I mean, it's fine. I can dig that, like, you know, someone back at the station would have been watching, whatever like that. But the line that the girl had to explain how we can get the signal out, the network is on an internet. The network is on an internet.
Yep.
Delightful.
Wait, it shows the troubling development process of these movies, because I was looking at that too. I'm like, all right, this movie came out in 98.
So no one's having cell phones.
And it's, and I'm thinking, if it premiered in 98, it was probably mostly written in 95, probably shot, you know, in like, like sort of 96. Like 96 into, or 97, like probably 1997, then edited for like 6 months. So I'm like, boy, it did come a long way, but that line is still pretty bad, even from like 1996. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a, that was an outdated, like, this movie feels very 1994. Like, in the huge jump between 94 and 98, you know? Embarrassing. And they have like limited email access, which they don't just email like, hey, Madison Square Garden's full of eggs, you know, but no, they're like, take us live.
And I hope somebody's watching.
I did laugh too, because this is like a very, like the TV news thing. The girl's like, hey, why aren't you guys taking me live? She goes, you should be taking me live. And then, like, you know, Hank Azaria's like, well, you know what, actually, it's not really about you. I'm going to pan over and show a Madison Square Garden full of eggs. I think they might be more interested in that than your stand-up. Thanks, though, you know.
So they get the word out. You have to blow up Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Because it's the only way that you can destroy all these eggs.
And they do so. The entirety of Madison Square Garden with two missiles from one plane.
Yes.
And that thing blows to high heaven.
Yeah.
Did we?
Just as they get out, by the way. They have 6 minutes to get out, and there's a long velociraptor chase where they.
Well, we forgot to talk about the way that everyone has been wanting to see in a Godzilla movie. ever since I was a kid, I said, boy, I would love to see Godzilla's babies slipping on gumballs. Yeah. Like we're looking at like a Mario Brothers.
And basketballs. And basketballs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so... Yeah, that was embarrassing. And I got to tell you, it was that the unfortunate thing was that they did a very poor job. Like, you know, here's now, like, you know, we're... Like, some people thought that, like, you know... That was sort of like a little exciting. It's a chase, whatever, like that. But these things, like it's the compositing of the dinosaurs is so bad. Like they look like they're stepping 6 inches above the floor. Like they're just not exactly even making contact with the surface.
Yeah,
this was really hard to watch.
Bad CG, even
it
for
really
98.
Was. It really was.
I mean, when you look at
and then they mixed it in with like. Puppets too, like they had actual practical, like four or five of them.
When they all burst in into the broadcast booth, did you see their arms just full like rubber flying?
And it's funny because you see the puppets and they look so stiff and sort of puppety. Mm-hmm. You can tell they're puppets, and then they cut CGI and it's totally fake CGI.
Yeah,
yep.
Did anyone else also how little threat these things really did pose? Because there are scenes where there's like six of these things snarling and they're like, get by them, and they like inch across the wall and maybe the last one thinks to snap at them once as they run away. That happens more than twice.
To escape the garden, there's
because
a
they smell like fish, by the way. That's why.
They smell like fish. They smell like the food that's everywhere around them and they could be eating.
Yeah.
But they've got to chase these two.
Well, because there's a room full of dinosaurs. And you're like, okay, how are they going to get out between them and the door? Probably 30 dinosaurs. So Jean Reno shoots a light, which hits the floor.
Chandelier, yeah.
And then by shooting the lights, which hit the floor, they clear a path?
Yeah, they scatter.
Again, why are the dinosaurs not just like...
hate breaking glass.
Yeah, like, are they so offended by the destruction of this historic building? The dinosaurs, they're like... I want to eat those people, but I just, you know
just
what?
I just can't.
Yeah,
just
we're going to let the courts decide this. they will be judged on a higher level.
So they get out, and Madison Square Garden blows up. Now, the one thing about this movie I remember seeing it in the drive-in, the first time I saw it when I was 10 or 11, was how many endings it had. Like, every time I thought the movie was over, it wasn't over. And this is one point where it's like, okay, Godzilla's dead. And now the babies are all dead. So and they actually have like a jib shot like coming out of them like the end of a movie. And then you're like, oh, okay, it's the end of the movie. And then you hear Godzilla roar in the background and he pops out again. It's like, now there's another half hour chase scene.
Sees all the dead babies. Yeah. Which, I mean, like, you know, any regular lizard just abandons the nest. Hardly any of them actually take care of their babies. This one, Godzilla sees his dead young.
And then he looks over.
You did this. And the whole thing is about killing those four people. Yeah.
And goes up, now, again, let's make the list of here. Things that we see outrun Godzilla in this movie. People on foot. Cabs. Things that cannot outrun Godzilla, attack helicopters.
Yep, and missiles.
And missiles. Yeah.
And there's jet planes too.
Yeah,
there's jets
planes.
Going
yeah, so
and
you're
those are getting
you're better off being on foot, or in a battered up New York City cab. So they start driving away from Godzilla, who's chasing them, because somehow Godzilla is not angry at the planes that dropped missiles on Madison Square Garden, but at four people who are standing outside.
And he somehow knows that they're the ones that hatched this plan. Like, he watched the broadcast.
Well, they were
in the one
they were
TV
standing
shop
outside
still,
the building watching the babies burn.
That's what it should have been. Godzilla should have been watching WICD and be like, that girl, she's the one who's behind this
like,
whole thing.
Like through the window of like the one TV store that's still open.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. Yeah. Just like, what?
So
they give chase, and one thing that just really kept irritating me in this chasing is they're running away in the cab. That stupid thing that Matthew Broderick throws out the number of the cab so they all know exactly how to talk to him, which is ridiculous. But the scale kept changing between Godzilla and the cab.
Yes.
The foot of Godzilla kept getting bigger and smaller and bigger and smaller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Godzilla's head, mm-hmm. at one point earlier in the film, we saw Godzilla like eat and attack helicopter. Then moments later, Godzilla can't even fit
the cab
in
his
mouth. And like the moment we've all been waiting for when a cab drives out of Godzilla's mouth and continues driving around.
As they get into a stereotypical cliche argument about where are we going to go? We're going to take the Brooklyn Bridge.
We're going to
take the tunnel. We can't get to the tunnel from here.
Yeah.
This is like this is, again, like the lazy screenwriting. Like, if you're shooting a movie in New York, you have to have that
the
sort
scene
of
the bickering of how to get where.
Ah, don't take the tunnel. Like,
it's like the scene in Super Mario Brothers when they're arguing about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A far superior screenplay, yeah. By the way. Yeah.
So basically, Matthew Broderick, because he's the one who figures everything out, decides, oh, we got to get him on a suspension bridge. So let's get him to the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
And he'll get tangled up in the wires.
In the wires. Yeah. Freeing us up to shoot him.
And now all of a sudden,
shooting him has been going game.
Now the missiles can track him, and they shoot him, and he dies from missiles.
Yep.
Now, so, if you've seen any Godzilla movie, missiles bounce off of Godzilla. In fact, it's a trademark of the character. Like, you fire a missile at Godzilla, he shakes it off.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the character.
Well, this is
to make it more realistic,
I
guess.
Lizard.
Yeah,
the giant Godzilla. Lizard gets blown up by missiles.
Well, hey, two of those missiles was able to destroy all of Madison Square Garden completely.
Powerful.
So, you know, 12 of them might be able to take down Godzilla.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Well, here's the other question. Did it destroy it completely? Because it seems that even though the military and everyone knew, hey, Madison Square Garden is full of dinosaurs and baby eggs, no one went in there to check it off and be like, hey, everything, get everything in here?
Did we get it all?
Because that one locker room seems untouched.
Well, this is another point where I'm like, uh-oh, another ending. Because it's like, Godzilla's dead. Then they go to the egg in the Madison Square Garden. And it's like,
I read a little bit. I just did a little bit of reading around last night about it, about how that Godzilla was the setup for Godzilla 2. And this is the one where, like, apparently this one was a much more docile breed than its parent, and this is the one that like starts to help mankind. Like, we train him and we work with him.
That actually did bleed over into a Saturday morning cartoon that was tied in with this movie,
which came indirectly from that.
I'm guessing that Saturday morning cartoon had better story structure and probably better character arcs than this movie does.
The one thing I was left wondering too at the end of the movie was they kill Godzilla on the bridge. He's wrapped up in the wires on the bridge and he's dead. Like, what do they do with the body? How do they dispose of this giant lizard body just laying on a bridge?
Yeah.
That's the thing also, because like, now the bridge has been compromised. You can't go out there safely.
It's going to sink the bridge. And
there's this kind of like, sorry, Godzilla feeling like at the end, which I'm like, well,
we didn't mean
they try to pull, like, the King Kong thing of like, you know, oh, he was just a misunderstood beast.
Yeah, but you're like, well, you're not really, like, you haven't portrayed him that way any of the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. But now we're supposed to be like, oh, sorry.
But here's one thing. Did anyone notice? I noticed this in the movie. That at no point in the film, do you actually see Godzilla kill a human being in the whole movie? Destruction is implied. But like, even the scene where like the guy's like in the truck, he's got the Walkman on at the beginning. Yeah. And of course, he doesn't hear Godzilla, doesn't feel this enormous entity coming toward him. The truck gets picked up. Even he, like, he's dangling out of the thing. He doesn't fall to his death.
I think he A-teams it. Yeah, like, he still gets to run away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not a single person is actually seen being killed by Godzilla
except for the entire film.
The
helicopter pilots who get eaten, but...
I guess, yeah. Oh, I guess that's implied, but yeah,
just
you don't...
But frankly, military. They deserved it.
Yeah, they had it coming.
Pure stupidity.
Because they're not good at their job.
Yeah.
You know?
One of my favorite things, too, is, and I'll let Jack tell this, but this Godzilla is actually in the canon of Godzilla.
Oh, thank you for reminding me. This movie did anything. If this movie did anything, it allowed me to see, because I grew up with Godzilla. I watched Godzilla films. Some of them are awesome. Some of them are just ridiculously awesome, like laughably awesome. And some of them are really good. Anyway, I didn't see this movie because I saw the trailers, I saw reviews. I was like, I'm a little worried about this one. I don't think so. Well, literally, Japan saw this, like Toho Studios. They thought the year before they had made a film, or 2 years before in Japan, they had made a film called Godzilla vs. Destroyer.
Mm.
And in Godzilla vs. Destroyer, they killed Godzilla off. And now they're giving it to the American film producers to do it. Because these movies are just too expensive for Japanese filmmakers to make at that point in time, I guess. So no more rubber suit monsters. It's going to be CGI, but we don't have the money to do the CGI. So we're going to make co-production with America. But all they did was license the character. So Toho stepped back, right? And they were ready to see the rebirth of their character because they're still getting money from this. And the Japanese film industry has a tremendous amount of pride in Godzilla.
Honor.
So... they see this movie and saw how bad it was, and within less than a year they made a rubber suit Godzilla movie called Godzilla 2000, which got an American theatrical release in 1999. I went and saw that, And yeah, it's corny, but it's 10 times better than this movie.
I didn't know that was why Godzilla 2000 existed. It was, no kidding?
I think that is why. That's something. Yes. And then that went on to produce, they made 6 more movies after that.
I've seen a couple of those.
And in one of those films, there is a scene where in the original Japanese version, I don't know if it's in the English dub, I don't remember, but I seem to remember there being a line where they're talking about Godzilla is coming, we've got to prepare the army, and somebody says, I thought they killed Godzilla in 1998. And somebody else says, no, they never confirmed that that was Godzilla.
Well, then there's actually, Godzilla's actually in that movie.
And in another movie called Godzilla Final Wars, they actually have a CGI 90s Godzilla get his ass kicked by a rubber-suited Godzilla.
No kidding. Nice. Wow.
However, Toho has licensed the character and have changed his name officially to just Zilla.
Zilla, yeah. I read that.
The reason being that the director of the film, the second movie that this character appears in is Godzilla Final Wars, he says they took the god out of Godzilla.
Oh, God. Wow.
So well, he is. There's a movie called Godzilla Final Wars where aliens invade, dozens of monsters are attacking, Godzilla comes and kicks all their asses, and one of the monsters is a CGI
Zilla.
I'd like to see like a good like 30-minute long short film of like, you know, Godzilla in his older years, looking back on his life, deciding was it a life well lived?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just kind of like, you know, just going through the autumn of his years, sort of like, I don't know, maybe like Wild Strawberries, you know, like that Ingmar Bergman film, and just like, he's looking back on his life before he dies, you know, just to decide, was it worth it?
Yeah. Did I do the right thing?
Did I make the right choices? All right, we have a couple So Wrong It's Right questions. The first one, some of you may know, the first one's pretty easy. One of the actors or actresses in this not only was nominated for, but won the Razzie for Worst Supporting Role.
Oh.
Anybody want to? So that's the first question is, can anyone guess who that was?
Which actress?
Yeah, actor or actress.
Oh, actor.
Well, there's really only three.
Yeah. I was going to say Godzilla's monster, the Godzilla monster in it.
Well, it's an actual person.
I'll say the wife.
Animal's wife?
I'm going to say the reporter, Aubrey.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, like,
there's so many candidates.
They're doing what they can with what they have.
It's kind of cruel. It is kind of cruel.
Was it Michael Lerner?
Or
wasn't Mike? Couldn't have been Michael Lerner.
No, it didn't. Jack got it. It was the reporter, Aubrey.
Yeah.
And then our second question is, when is the last time Aubrey, I mean, who is arguably the female lead in a $100 million studio film in 1998? When is the last time she worked?
Oh, no.
Say 1998?
It may not be that bad, but like...
2002.
All right, Cody's going 2002.
I'm going to say 2008.
$1.
Okay.
2006.
Jack, well, actually, in this one, everyone's sort of right. The last time she worked regularly was 2002. In 2008, she made a guest appearance on the TV show Big Shots, but that was her last on-camera appearance.
Oh, that poor thing.
So this is our final So Wrong It's Right question for this week. The winner wins dragon jerky,
ooh,
which I got in the mail. It is jerky it's part of this Loot Crate program. So it is beef jerky, I believe, but it is green colored with some green food coloring to make a dragon jerky that was appropriate for the Godzilla episode.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. One actor or actress in this movie was not able to attend their high school graduation because they got in a physical altercation in the weeks before it with their English teacher and were blocked from being able to go to their own high school graduation.
Hank Azaria.
All right, Tim's going with Hank Azaria.
Matthew Broderick.
Oh, Matthew Broderick. Matthew Broderick, who did kill someone, by the way. Yep. For anyone who doesn't know that story.
Is it an actor?
Actor or actress. Actor or actress.
A physical altercation.
Yeah.
Who else is in it? I don't even know. I'm going to say Jean Reno.
Jean Reno, all good choices. 3 for 3. The answers to all of today's questions were Maria Patillo.
Oh, really?
The girl who played Aubrey.
Wow.
Her Wikipedia page is a gold mine. it has been a rough couple of years. As our guest, I'm giving Tim the dragon jerky.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Does it say anything about what she's doing now?
It basically says not much.
I'm hoping Patillo.com.
There is one more line because they were talking about Godzilla 2 This is from the Wikipedia page on the planned Godzilla sequel. The producers were, this is a quote, quote, accurately aware of Patillo's performance, the film treatment limited her presence to a small sequence in just Act One of the planned Godzilla sequel. They basically were treating her as the Jar Jar Binks of Godzilla.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Yeah,
I don't think she was that bad.
I kind of feel bad for her a little bit.
I do feel bad for her. She's given nothing to work with. I mean, I don't think she's good in the movie.
So
but
thin.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
I mean,
it's
she's
brutal.
Miscast as like what she's doing.
Yeah,
I mean, like, you know, she's yeah, but
she might be the
like,
worst.
Maybe she could have been. Maybe she
movie.
Could have been like. Maybe if they removed the Matthew Broderick character and had it be about and had Animal instead of being a photog be like. A cab driver, and then she
well,
could have been like she could have been like his nagging fare, and then they could be driving through the city trying to get away from Godzilla. Even that could have been more fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
Remember how I was saying earlier about how like you know all these '90s action films had like these different formulas. Mm-hmm. I gotta tell you, I think I know exactly where it stems from. It stems from Die Hard.
Yeah.
How Die Hard like had all these different characters in different locations, and you know you learned a little bit about them. Some of them were appealing, you know, some maybe weren't.
And they all
but they had all
end.
These separate things going on, and so like, yeah, she doesn't deserve the fact that her character was underwritten because like that was what they were doing for her from the get go.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Ugh,
yeah
poor
they,
thing.
Yeah,
if this was Marissa Tomei, the character would probably still suck.
Right. Well, and you're saying that Marissa Tomei is a great actress.
Oh, she is
I
a great
agree.
Actress.
Right.
She
yeah,
is. Yeah.
I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. There was no saving that part. All right. Last thing we have to do is to summarize. People, we've talked about this off mic a little bit. A friend of mine was very upset when he heard we'd only done one James Bond movie, and that it was Octopussy because, in his words, he said there's like 8 James Bond movies worse than that. We went up to some ranking like charts, like even like Rolling Stone and all these other ones who've ranked all 22 Bond movies?
23
wow. Bond movies now. Yep. And like there are regularly 7 to 9 Bond movies ranked lower than Octopussy.
I thought that Octopussy was a good sort of
but it is
chuckle.
The funniest
it's
one.
A good
people
chuckle.
Did agree.
It's a good intro. It was a good intro movie for us.
It is. It may be the funniest one because it's the goofiest of the Bonds. So we're going to debate now which Bond, because we really do have to get back into the world of goofy James Bond movies for which one we're going to do next. View to a Kill is a possibility. Mm-hmm. Die Another Day is certainly a possibility.
Sure.
I think we have to do Die Another Day is the worst.
That
is that the one with the invisible car?
Yeah. Everyone says
God.
That. Everyone says that when I say
okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's
yes.
one, is that one with Halle Berry?
Halle Berry.
Yes.
Who
is
atrocious.
They were going to try to spin off her Miss character.
Yeah.
And,
yes. yeah. And which okay, World is which one's
World's
the,
Not Enough is Denise Richards.
Is the Denise, which
yeah,
that
see,
one is terrible.
A lot of the Bros ones do blend in your brain, don't they? Because
well,
I have the same problem where
yeah, Tomorrow
I
Never
those
Dies.
Titles.
Tomorrow Never Dies and World is Not Enough always get mixed up in my head. But then I remember.
I
really remember by the Bond Girl.
I can only remember most of them by like
yeah, I've seen
like,
them a bunch of times.
Well,
ones.
Even like the more ones, like I can go like, okay, there's the Blaxploitation one, which is
Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die.
Well,
okay,
it's
I
good,
think that's
it's
awesome.
The good one.
I think that's awesome. I think it's
that's
awesome.
That's the good Roger Moore one.
Again, we're talking about
The best Roger Moore one is The Spy Who Loved Me.
No, that's a sleeper. That's,
well, to call it a good one, we're talking about the bad guy becomes a balloon at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not perfect.
So, okay, but there's the Blaxploitation one, there's the Star Wars ripoff one,
Moonraker.
Which is
Moonraker. God.
Which should be fun.
There is Octopussy, there is
Man with a Golden Gun.
Oh, Man with a Golden Gun, which I just remember as
was that
the
a Roger
Hervé,
Moore one?
That's
yeah.
That's I just
that's
remember that as
one.
The Hervé Villechaize
one. It's good except
one.
For the slide whistle
with,
and the most awesome stunt you've ever seen and they add a slide whistle to it for some reason.
But it's cool because Christopher Lee's a bad guy. And
Christopher, well, they offset the awesomeness of Christopher Lee by casting Tattoo as, you know,
yeah.
his henchman.
Here's the thing. I gotta say, and I've told this to other people, and I started to say it here. The first two Bond films with Sean Connery, Dr. No and Thunderball, are good films.
Yeah, Thunderball's number 4.
Number 4?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
From Russia with Love, which
from
is great.
From Russia with Love,
Goldfinger.
Which is good.
Goldfinger,
yeah.
and then Thunderball.
Finger.
And you're right, Thunderball is awesome.
I don't like Goldfinger? I don't.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't
like
it.
Why not?
I just think it's a ludicrous plot. I mean, like...
But that makes it good!
No, it doesn't. Everything with Roger Moore is horrible. All of the Pierce Brosnan ones are bad. I didn't see.
Come on, GoldenEye. Nice.
Timothy
good.
Dalton ones. I didn't see.
Timothy Dalton. I like the Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, I don't know. They're okay.
But just the here's the thing of it. They're so overrated. There's so much ridiculousness in these films. They're all, every one of them, almost, except for like a couple of the very early ones, are way too long. I mean, like, these are like 2 hour, 20 minutes, 2.5 hour films for no real reason. And the whole thing of it is just like the things that they talk about, like, you know, oh, these are the elements of a giant James Bond film. They just keep amplifying and making like caricatures of it as the films go on. I mean, like, you know, the gizmos become stupider and more in particular and insane. Like, you can only use them in one situation. And here it is. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And, like, I would love to see, like, the James Bond film where, like, he got issued a tool that he never wound up using.
Right.
Just, like, at the very end, like, he's going through his pockets. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here you go. It's back, you know.
Sometimes films have to be ridiculous. And if you're willing to bend to the ridiculous, you can like something like James Bond.
That's why Casino Royale and Skyfall are so good.
But Casino Royale and Skyfall are awesome for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
See, you got to appreciate them.
Like them. I like the, really, I didn't like a James Bond film, except for those first two. And like, I didn't like a single one that came out in like the last 30 years.
You didn't
until
even like
they rebooted it with Daniel Craig.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Even Skyfall, if you think about what's going on in Skyfall,
it's a well-made movie.
Nothing makes sense.
Yeah, but it's an awesome
so well-made
movie.
I mean, nothing.
I don't think Skyfall's all that.
Yeah,
I got to tell you,
this is the guy who hates Skyfall.
The first two-thirds of Skyfall, I think, are probably one of the best Bond films ever. And that last third.
Really?
Just
I love
that.
Really?
Just
the last third is the best part.
The last third is what
no way! That's awesome.
I'm with Tim on this, and I love.
No,
and I like Skyfall a lot, but it's brilliantly made. But the film at that point, the weight of the craziness of the storyline is like. Like it's breaking under the weight,
but
of
that's
the
where
crazy
the
storyline
doesn't even matter at that point. That's where it breaks down.
That's
into,
it's James
just,
Bond
into just James Bond, and
you got
at least what I like about
the
it
whole
is
bit
that
where he's
the
attacking
end.
The building with the helicopter, and he's only got a shotgun to defend himself.
But
he's got that's so cool.
So here's his ancestral mass, abandoned man, abandoned since he was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
He shows up. The caretaker's still there. Recognizes him immediately.
Well, that's a cliche in a lot of films.
Just horrible. There, Albert Finney just got to give him something before.
You could also, and a good friend of mine made
this
the case
awesome.
This week that Javier Bardem wins. Like whatever.
Yes, he does. It's like The Dark Knight.
That's why it's
awesome. It's like The Dark Knight.
Like James Bond largely wins because James Bond's plan, and I'm using plan in the loosest term possible, is so flat out dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Bond's not the planner, though, so it makes sense for Bond to have a plan that doesn't work.
I guess I don't.
Bond
is
the blunt instrument.
I like
no, you're right. He
I like,
wins. I was. When
it's like it's like the dark. It's
we
like the Dark Knight.
Yeah.
The bad guy wins.
You know, well, the only way that he doesn't win and that he doesn't get to watch her die, or like at the end decide, all of a sudden
he decides he doesn't know we need
to die together, and that doesn't work out. He dies and then she dies, so he doesn't get to relish his victory.
And it's also ripping off the Dark Knight.
Oh,
like let's be honest. Like it's not independently like, oh, here's this great idea. It's like
it's very very
lifting from the Dark Knight.
The big reason why I didn't like his. Like we don't need to know James Bond background as a child. We don't need to know his childhood trauma. We don't need
that's
to
part
know
of the character.
All that kind of stuff.
I'm coming from I read the books.
You read
I love
the books.
And it's more like the books where that does matter more.
Which I figured actually probably is the case.
More.
But as far as the films go,
the end
it's
of the
never been discussed in any other film before, really.
Yeah.
Just that he was like kind of orphaned.
Well, then
and
that's what makes it stand out.
But the thing of it that I do like about Skyfall is that they tear apart everything Bond from that point out. His Aston Martin is destroyed.
Right.
Q is dead. His, you know, his home and all of his background is dead. So like, you know, there's not Q's dead. M is dead. And so everything from that point going forward is a new Bond.
Yeah, that's why
free
I love that.
And unshackled.
Yeah. That's why I love
tradition.
that ending when he comes into M's office and it's the new M. And
it actually
like, now it's James Bond.
What actually took them three films to really reboot the franchise.
And it works.
It's a good point. Yeah.
I think it works. Yeah. I really do. I think that I love James Bond.
How many more do you think Daniel Craig has in him?
He's contracted for two more.
Two more.
That's I think the most he could do plausibly.
probably.
Yes, yeah. You know, you're right.
Which I think that'd be fine.
Whenever an actor stays too long, as Roger Moore did, as Connery tried when he came back to Never Say Never Again.
Do you think, Jack? Do you think he stayed too long with senior citizen James Bond?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so here's my vote. Should we say Die Another Day is going
to
be our
Die Another Day is absolutely needs it. I think Viola Kill and Moonraker need to make appearances.
I would love to do...
The Diamonds Are Forever is pretty bad.
For Your Eyes Only, too, because it's just the creep factor of him and the... like 18-year-old girl who really wants to bang him.
Which one's For Your
Eyes? That's the one with the scaling the side of the cliff to get to that.
Okay. I'm very I'm trying open, to think by the of way, to
anything
doing...
that stands out about it, because it really doesn't. For Your Eyes Only doesn't stand out.
We're probably never going to get to it. I would not be against doing the blaxploitation James Bond movie, which
Live and Let Die is awesome.
As a kid, Live
and Let Die is awesome.
I watched about 20 minutes of that. It was on TV not that long ago for whatever reason, and I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, no, so you shut up. That movie's awesome.
It's so bad. Too. It is.
I mean, I've read that Ian Fleming was a racist, and the book is totally racist.
Then
the movie seems to be true to some of the source material.
No, read the book. It's a lot more racist than
that. Oh, yeah, yay. All right, so Die Another Day will be next. As always, we're going to put our plea. If you like the show, please give us a good review on iTunes. That helps the show out, boosts us on iTunes, so it just takes a second. And I think that's it. We have longest episode ever in the books.
Oh, God, really? I'm so sorry.
No, I'm the one who introduced the James Bond discussion, which I'm sure tipped it over. It
needed to happen.
Tim, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. I always enjoy doing this.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, and this is a zinger of a movie. All right, I think that is it. We will see everyone back here next time. Thanks. Bye. Yeah.